know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, good day! Welcome, 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 one and all, to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, filling in one last time this week for Mr. Bob Kincaid. Here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, and holy crap, I get up this morning and it seems like it's all going off in Egypt. I think that might just kind of consume the show pretty much tonight. But we got other things lined up, got a couple climate change stories, got some politics crap, but how can you not be paying attention to what's going on in the north of Africa? It's amazing. And Mubarak is one out of touch and doomed motherfucker, if you ask me. Excuse me for the language from the beginning, but hey. So I get up this morning. We're rolling into things. Got to take care of all the regular business. Now I'm hoping that the toll-free number is working today. Unfortunately, it's one of these things that was scheduled for just showtime, so we won't know until someone gives it a go. So we'll find out if that's happening. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. On your own dime, 304-574-7811. 304-574-7811. Email rolls into John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com, and love to hear from you. But, you know, so those of you that know me, and, you know, and most of the listeners know the deal, I'm not over there, I'm down under, and have been for a long, bloody time. So when I do this drive time slot of Bob's, it's 10 o'clock in the morning for me the next day. We're always ahead of you. Anyway, I wake up this morning and turn on the news. And what do I see? The streets are still full in Cairo. And I just and woke up just after Hosni Mubarak's speech. And so, you know, doing the whole backtrack. Okay, what the hell's been going on here? And, I mean, seriously, wow. Talk about living in a fantasy land? Holy jeez. You know, Mubarak and Suleiman. Now, okay. So it appears, if I followed things right this morning, we had, not all that long ago, Barack Obama came out and gave this kind of nice little supportive speech, sitting there going, we're watching history, it's all about to happen. Seemingly under good advice that Mubarak and the regime were gonna, you know, basically, you know, fuck off. But he's a tenacious little son of a bitch. You gotta give him that. And in a pre-recorded speech, interesting, pre-recorded, mind you, right? He couldn't be, like, in the television studio at the time. That would have been a problem. So Mubarak and Suleiman could be doing these speeches from anywhere. From anywhere. So you have Barack Obama speaking, someone from the military came out to the protesters and said, you know, all your wishes are going to be granted. And so the speech starts, and the millions now in the street are just waiting for the, yeah, I'm getting out. And suddenly he fucking flips. He flips. He goes, nope, not leaving yet. Not leaving till the election's in September. And, you know, he's using some weasel language. You know, I kept seeing this quote on Al Jazeera scrolling by where he said, future elections will be fair and open. And I immediately my brain went to future elections. Maybe not the next one, right? So, you know, could he be trying to play some sort of long-standing, you know, waited out game, which I think has been kind of his concept from the beginning. But it's fallen apart, and it appears that as soon as Mubarak said he wasn't going, the people in the streets just got pissed off. Now, this is where it gets scary. We've had the military go in, and I think kind of make a forceful request of Mubarak to get out. And I think he's refused. So I think we're in some really, really, really dodgy territory at the moment. You know, the leadership of the regime could be freaking out of the country by now, and we wouldn't even know it. Because what's interesting, if you listen to the speeches, at least the way that they're translated, from both Mubarak and Suleiman, they've been these paternal, bruised ego affairs. And Suleiman, he's still talking as though that these are all children out there, all teenagers out there. And he's like, everybody go home. Everybody go home. We must band together around the nation. And that whole paternalistic language of the fatherland kind of shit. That just doesn't wash. It just doesn't wash. And the Egyptian people aren't buying it. But now, and things are happening so thick and fast, and I imagine I'll get some updates throughout the show from Gail. But we're at the tipping point now. I really think we're seriously at the tipping point. That this is either going to go one way or another. The military is going to back the regime, or they're going to back the people at this point. And it's really all up to them at this stage. And you know, Barack Obama's got to be pissed off. He has got to be really pissed off because Mubarak made an ass out of him on international television. Do you think that's going to impact the way the administration handles things from here on out? Because, and I'm actually been pretty supportive of the way Barack Obama and the administration has handled this. They've pretty much been hands off. You know, and the United States doesn't do hands off very well. You know, I mean, we've got this history. And, you know, this guy being there is part of that history. Barack Obama didn't put the guy in 30 years ago. Waiting for that conspiracy theory. You know, but, you know, we used to call him No Drama Obama, but I do think Barack's got a bit of a temper too. And I think he can get mad. And I wonder if this might actually get him mad. But I don't know what if any action he should take. Okay, supposedly we've got like a warship around Suez or something. And, you know, like Gail and I were talking about this morning, and you know Gail said something to the effect of, you know, I wish that, you know, if it were possible that, you know, the US could kind of like parachute in, say, we're not staying, we're just taking this guy, these guys out and getting them out of your way, and we're getting out of the way. But that's not really a feasible thing, is it? And we've been talking a lot about how this event is changing the general view of that area of the world. Anyone who's honestly watching this and absorbing what's been going on cannot avoid the fact that this is probably the closest thing to the constitutional conventions of the founding of the United States. Like, this is the closest thing we've had since the founding fathers on this planet that I can think of. Right? We have the people demanding that the people represent themselves. You know? And the Egyptian people en masse are proving that they are peaceful. And this is the way you win. This is the way you win, no matter how you are provoked. You don't retaliate. And for the most part, that is exactly what they have done. But, you know, I'm just finding the whole thing unbelievably fascinating. You know, when Mubarak did his backflip, that the crowds in Tahrir Square, I believe, just jumped up and started tearing the screen apart. It's a big, to quote Joe Biden, this is a big fucking deal. And one of the things that seems to have, you know, this whole thing's been escalating, you know, I mean, we're in like, what, day 17 or something of this? It's incredible. Americans could not do this. They just don't have it. Hope one day that they'll gain it, but they just don't have it. We don't, we as a people do not have this kind of stamina. We do not have this kind of... attention span. These people are focused. Gail was telling me last night that, you know, the way time zones are, what's today, what's yesterday, but I think it was yesterday, the sign of the day was... in Egypt was from was a little boy in the front saying something like, Barack, leave Barack so my daddy will come home. No, sorry. Leave Barack so my daddy will stop watching Al Jazeera so I can watch cartoons again. But, I mean, it's just... I keep watching this, and we hear all kinds of noise from different directions. And sometime overnight, CNN was streaming Egyptian state TV. I heard the state TV, the propaganda network. I mean, CNN's been kind of like all over the shop when it comes to its coverage. In the beginning, they had all these people going, the Muslim Brotherhood, it's Al-Qaeda in another form, fear, ah! And they got every fucking neocon hack they could get on for a couple of days. Meanwhile, Anderson Cooper's on the ground reporting what's actually happening. And it seemed to bring them around a bit. And I mean, I didn't see it. I'm looking for verification from someone. But I did see I was shown these reports last night that CNN was actually streaming Egyptian state television. What the hell are you thinking? You know, Al Jazeera, maybe. And I hands down, the coverage has been coming from Al Jazeera, especially now. And, you know, there was a professor from Monash University, an Egyptian man, on the breakfast news on the ABC here this morning. And he was saying that, you know, some are saying that it was the founding of Al Jazeera that may have been the catalyst, the initial catalyst that brought this about. Because if it wasn't for Al Jazeera actually being the voice of people in the area and seeming to do some of the best journalism out there, could be seen as, you know, if Al Jazeera has not been legitimized by these events and the way that they've handled them and the way that they've managed to stay on air. You know, the Cairo offices were closed and torched. Journalists beaten, arrested, tortured. But the tenacity, we have phones. Welcome to Head On. Who we got?
Oh, John, it's Jim. How you doing?
Hey, Jim, welcome aboard. It's a pretty crazy day today.
It is indeed. I don't know. Looking at it, John, The whole thing is a question of patience. He wins who waits. And I don't know how long these people can wait. I don't know if they can wait 7 months. I don't know if Mubarak is playing for time. I think that's what he probably is, probably to engineer forces of reaction. But I think three things are key here, or several things. The first is the position of the Egyptian military.
Oh, yeah.
That's very important. And also the actions of the Israelis, because, of course, the Israelis are tied to Mubarak as far as the linchpin for keeping the peace over there.
Yeah.
And they could play a considerable role in this thing.
And did you hear the quote from one of the Israelis, I believe, you know, who was saying, you know, that they supported Mubarak? Took a quote from Suleiman, I think it was, who he said, you know, he wanted Palestine to go hungry but not starve. That's what they like about him.
Well, yeah, I know. But, you know, once this thing started and once the liquid has been spilled, you can't put it back in the jug.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as far as Mubarak is concerned, he had best be at an undisclosed location somewhere, or he might find himself ending up where the Tsar did in 1918.
Well, you know, he kept saying, you know, my son and I will die. You know, beware what you ask for. And, you know, you make comment about whether they can sustain this. And my response to that would be, as I've been watching this thing, Jim, I think these pro-democracy protesters have been really brilliant. They've been pacing themselves. And it seems as though that there are two weekly peaks in the movements, Tuesdays and Fridays. But the
low... Well, let me ask you.
Okay, go ahead.
If I may. How long do you think these people can sustain themselves as far as food, supplies, and stuff like that are concerned?
This is what's interesting, because what I think is happening is they go out in mass, you know, the big numbers, you know, at where it peaks on this Tuesday and Friday thing. Then they leave a core group, which basically is place marking, going, you know, it isn't over yet, but it gives people an opportunity since this is such a cross-section of Egyptian society. The businesses that are closed in the middle of Tahrir Square, many of those business owners will probably be in the protests. So every couple of days, some of the people break off, they go home, they take care of their kids, they re-up their supplies. The business owners and the produce people, you know, get food and things to people, and it keeps them going for a couple of days.
Well, I just wonder what mechanism is used to keep them supplied. That's the reason I'm asking.
It seems that it's completely a public outpouring. And they're just, you know, the people come into Tahrir Square just with food and water and are passing it out. This has been happening for 2 weeks. And like I said, it appears, though, that they're doing this thing where they're never quite going away and then coming back in peaks in these rushes on these days. And as it's progressed, the size of the crowd between the two peak days has been, you know, less of a fall in people. And in fact, no one seems to be leaving since Mubarak pulled his backflip. And they were calling that tomorrow was going to be the day to march on state TV. I think they're not going to wait till tomorrow. Even though
I think tomorrow is like one of their holidays of the week or something like that, so they should have more and more people there.
Yeah, and this
but
again,
the other
and this
thing
again is the way that,
him.
Sorry, I'll just finish one thing. And I think that they're very cleverly. This is where I think the Egyptian people have been genius at this, man, is I think that they really have organized themselves so that they can maintain a siege, because they understand what's going on, and it's leaving that presence and then sending people off at prescribed times to go and take care of their families, up their supplies, run their businesses for a couple of days, which probably is all local markets and whatnot, which would be some local economy things to keep people going, because I think these people have decided we don't need to have a greater economy right now until they lost their fear. They're not fearing.
Well, they're angry and they're serious.
Yeah.
And that's for sure. And the other leg of the triad, of course, is Saudi Arabia. Now, the Saudis had promised Mubarak any financial aid that he would, from the United States. And that's, you know, his position there is, or the maintenance of his position is definitely in their interest as well. Because, I mean, when revolutions like this start, they have a way of spreading.
Mm-hmm.
And I would dare say that if Mubarak has to split, he's going to be headed for Saudi Arabia. I mean, Idi Amin went there. The guy from Tunisia went there. And that's where, who knows, Mubarak, if he has any sense, will probably be broadcasting from Riyadh, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, and I think Gail was telling me this morning that people are kind of thinking that he's actually gone to the south of the country. Because, you know, all you need is a big blue curtain, an Egyptian flag, and a presidential seal, and that speech could be coming from anywhere.
Oh, yeah, it's just kind of like, you know, our bunker at the Greenbrier here, they have a big thing of the Capitol in the background so the president can broadcast in case of a nuclear war. I mean, he could be anywhere in a state setting. But, you know, it is a question of patience. He wins who waits. And, you know, these people are just pouring out by the hundreds of thousands. And this is an interesting note, and I'm going to get off here because I know you got other callers.
You don't have to rush, man. You don't have to rush. No one's beaten down the door yet. So, you know,
I've always been a student of ancient Egypt. As a matter of fact, right now I'm looking at 9 Egyptian statues of their gods. And I have a lot of collectibles from there. And I spent 3 months in Saudi Arabia, which wasn't a whole lot of fun, but that's another story for another time, okay?
It's like,
but I know more about the old Middle and New Kingdoms than I do about modern Egyptian politics. But, you know, I have noticed a number of documentaries that are led by Mubarak's head of Supreme Antiquities Council, Zahir Hawass. You ever heard of this guy?
No, I can't say that I have.
Yeah, he is the chairman of the Egyptian Supreme Council for Antiquities, and he wears this Indiana Jones type hat, and he goes in these tombs and things like that. And they're documentaries.
Right.
And is extremely autocratic. I mean, they were in Cheops Pyramid, and he had some people with him. And one of the girls who was with him had to go to the bathroom and actually wet her pants. And the way he turned on her, saying she had defiled that tomb and for her to get out. I mean, they were in crawl spaces and going through this tomb that I wouldn't even think about going through. My God, I have claustrophobia anyway, but to be up there and the autocracy and the way this man treated her and the way he treats everybody, if that's any indication of Mubarak, well, I'm sure he probably is patterning himself after Mubarak. I mean, just the way he acted, I thought to myself, my God, what a tyrant.
Well, I mean, you know, it's the same thing with the language of Suleiman in a lot of his speeches, you know, the one where he's sitting on, we're going to call all the protesters' parents and tell them to get their kids home, you know, and it's just this condescending, patriarchal, you know.
These are not children playing hooky from school.
I know. And when I first saw that speech, you know, it's just like the coffee almost went straight across the room. It's like, really? You actually said that out loud? I mean, that was one of the most ridiculous statements I have ever heard from. I mean, it was Bob.
Yeah, I mean, it gives me an idea of what type of grasp of reality he has upon the magnitude and the seriousness of this situation. Because I don't think these people are going to go home. And I don't think that they are going to just let Mubarak stay. And, you know, if he does stay, well, I don't know. Who knows what he's planning and who knows what's going to happen. And, of course, the Suez Canal is important, too, because, I mean, that's a very vital artery for the whole of Europe.
Yeah, and Gail's just come in and given me a little correction. The thoughts of where Mubarak might be is not in the south. It's actually Sharm el-Sheikh in Sinai, northeast between Israel and Egypt. So that's where they're thought to be maintaining their, you know, their presence.
Yeah, it seems reasonable to me. Of course, if I were he, I think I'd be in Switzerland someplace. I would be as far away as I could be. And, you know, I'm just looking at it selfishly. If I were that man, I would take my millions and billions and book it.
Well, yeah, but see, that like it really seems that with these little tin potty guys, it really is a matter of a very easily bruised ego. I mean, you listen to Mubarak's speech, and you're looking at an egotist who is just completely insulted. How dare
you? I mean, he's 83 years old, 83, 84.
Yeah, and he's not well.
I mean, how much time does the man have left?
Well, I think he's worried about maybe spending some time in prison. You know, it's either president or prison.
Well, the thing about it is, if he doesn't get out of there, and if he doesn't try to put a cap on this thing, and if he does lose the support of the military, he could be losing more than time. He could be losing his life, because, I mean, the more these people are left to their own devices, should he fall into their hands, the less inclined toward mercy they're going to show toward him.
Absolutely.
I mean, he has had his chance.
He's had a lot of chances. He's had a lot of chances. And this is where I'm really confident that the people as a whole are going to be able to maintain this. They have just shown.
But may I ask you something, please?
Sure.
What do you think, should he leave, what type of government would come to power over there?
Well, see, I tell you, I've been saying since the beginning that I think one of the best ways that this could pan out to me would be for the military, which actually still holds is held with high regard by the people still, you know, because they were ordered to open live fire on them over a week ago, and they haven't, on the protesters. So I would think that if, on the behest of the loose leadership of all these disparate groups that have come together, because there is not a religious context to this, no matter how much the American media tries to beat up on the Muslim Brotherhood, this is a secular uprising. There is no two ways about it. This is a secular uprising.
Do you think they could form a cabinet of some type?
I think so, and so if
military supporting them.
Well, I think this is what I think could happen, and with help from the United Nations, this could all work out. Okay, the military finally goes, you know, this is enough. They go in and actually pull the actual military coup, and they install an interim military government that has, you know, and we're not talking, you know, like, you know, boot kicking, but just a caretaker. Because, like, here in Australia, you know, when we have an election and there's a changeover, the government goes into what they call caretaker mode. It
right.
has certain limited powers, but it's all to keep the machine running to help facilitate the changeover of administration, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, if the military came in and said, we are standing for the people, you got to go, here's your plane, we tried to ask you nicely for the past 2 weeks, you're not doing it, okay, now it's at gunpoint, get out. The military says, okay, they're gone. Now then they have to work on bringing Alberti and all the different factions. And Alberti, who does not want to be any kind of president, I think could be one of the best picks to be, say, an interim figurehead. Because he has generally high support across all these factions. And so, but it would have to be that the military says, we are caretaker because within 90 days, we are going to have an open and fair election overseen by the United Nations. And because they actually have most of the systems of a democracy in place, it's just that it's been one party dominated.
I see.
You know what I mean? Like they have the look of a democracy, so they have a lot of the stuff happening. Ooh, update. Egyptian State TV announced high profile activist Wael Gonen said people should go home. Absolute total lie. So now the Egyptian TV are trying to put words in the mouths of the pro-democracy protesters trying to get these people to go home. So,
well, I'll say they're en route to the TV station right now if they're not there already.
Yeah, so this...
I don't know. I just wonder if you have a military strongman or a military junta as a caretaker type of situation. But, you know, what frightens me is once the military gets a hold of something like that, sometimes they don't want to let go. You may have Mubarak being replaced by I don't know.
I agree. There is that risk. There is that risk. But as far as I'm looking at it, so far, when Mubarak has tried to turn the military on the people, they have refused.
Well, you know, he may be trying this thing today to try to get them to react so that the military
turn
on them.
And I don't think the military's going to.
Well, I hope not. I certainly hope they do not.
They've shown incredible restraint in this.
Yeah, they have. They have. And, you know, blood has been spilled there. And like I say, once the genie's out of the bottle, he's not going to be put back in the bottle again.
Yeah.
Before
the show started and I was running music, I was playing a Neville Brothers track called "You Can't Stop Running Water," and that was exactly why I was playing it, to warm up, because that's exactly how I feel about the situation. You can't turn this around. How it actually still an unknown, and how violent so far it's been good. And I don't think that, this bit of information that Gail just brought about the Egyptian state TV trying to put words in the mouth of one of the activists, this might be the cover story that they are marching on Egyptian TV right now.
They are. They are, in fact, as we speak, and also toward the palace 6 miles away from the square where they've been congregating. But I'll say this, don't get off here, but this situation is highly fluid, and it's going, in my opinion, and it will probably transition over the weekend from highly fluid to highly volatile.
I can't say that you're wrong. I cannot say that you're wrong.
Well, listen, thank you for your time, and we'll have to wait and see, and... you know, either it will or it won't. I hope that it won't go to the point where there is just a total breakdown and you have a power back in there into which all types of things could be drawn that are not very desirable, you know?
But the image of the atheists and the Christians making a human barricade in front of the Muslims while they prayed, and the Muslims and the atheists protecting them, the Christians while they had mass in the early days of this, really lays down the groundwork that this is the people, this is not... I don't think the Muslim Brotherhood has any intention of trying to jump in. They're not a wacko Islamic organization. They're much more like the Egyptian version of the Salvation Army.
Well, one other thing, and I do have to get off here. In revolutions, for example, in the Russian Revolution, when that started, you had centrist and milder elements of people who tried to coalesce and create a type of successor state to the Romanovs. But then, as that thing went on and other elements became involved, then you had more sinister and less kindly people getting involved, and that's always been in the back of my mind. Yeah. I mean, there are all kinds of people who could use this for their own advantage and turn this whole situation into a pretty nasty business, but I hope that doesn't happen.
And so far it hasn't, and there's been we've had a lot of moments, Jim, where people said, oh, this is when it's going to get bad, and it really hasn't. But thanks for your time.
Well, let's hope so, and I thank you for your time.
No worries, buddy. Great call. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye, John.
All right, buddy. And that was, of course, our good buddy Jim. And I'm going to take a little break here, and I'm going to play that track that I warmed the stream up with, because I do think it... You know, just kind of sums up what I feel about it. It's a track actually called Sons and Daughters. So we're going to take a little break. I'm going to get a fresh coffee. The Neville Brothers. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I'm John Fox, your fill-in host for this last show for the week. You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network,
young
America's
man,
liberal voice.
On his way home from the market. Just enjoying a beautiful afternoon. It gets kind of dark. Sun just set. There's these other young men standing on the corner. Nothing to do. Just hanging around. They're passing out the weapons to each other. Brass knuckles. Pipes. Chains. Half of bricks. Broken bottles. Switchblades. Young man lands in jail for some crime he did not commit. 352 years hard labor in Angola prison. 352 years in hard labor. Sleepless nights between sugar cane and cotton. That's where he learns the ropes and pays with his soul for some crime did not commit. We think we're safe at home with our bumper stickers saying, just say no. We give up a few freedoms here and there in the name of a squeaky clean America. America. Now they've got us hypnotized and hysterical. Now they've got us hypnotized and hysterical. Screaming for blood and justice. Now they've got us hypnotized and hysterical. Screaming for blood and justice. They show us the faces of hatred over and over. A new one every week. Could be Manuel Noriega. Could be the Ayatollah. Any old scapegoat will do. The young man would be our sacrificial lamb. Pro-choice, no choice. We're sending our sons and daughters to this slaughter. Pro-choice, no choice. Slogans mean nothing to a young man facing 352 years hard labor in Angola for a crime he did not commit. It's freedom of speech, as long as you don't say too much. Can't stop running water. You can't kill the fire that burns inside. Don't deny our flesh and blood. And don't forsake our sons and daughters. Yeah, you can't stop running water. You can't kill the fire that burns inside. Don't deny our flesh and blood. Don't forsake our sons and daughters. It's freedom of speech, as long as you don't say too much. I think we all running, thinking that we can hide. I think we're running, trying to get away. But sooner or later we're gonna realize we're gonna meet up with the truth face to face.
Genius song, just a genius song. Just turn off my speakers.
Whoops.
Just turn off the music.
I hear a sound. It's going.
I almost can't stop this.
Brain.
I'm gonna let this roll. This just fits too.
I hear talking. I feel the falling rain. I see a young man crying, 'cause the whole world has let him down. I see a young man crying, staring at the cold, cold ground. My mind is like a spring in a clock that won't unwind. Can't see, can't think, can't feel, I'm out of time. I'm up and I'm down, tell me where we'll end. On this carousel, tell me when will it end. I hear thunder, and I can feel the wind. I can see angry faces in the eyes of men. I hear talking of people, the whole world is gone insane. And all there is left is the falling rain.
Gail and I listened to this album last night, and this is all off of the Neville Brothers album, Brothers Keeper. And you know, I'm like the biggest screaming atheist that there is, but there's some spiritual stuff in here that I just love, because it's all that message of loving one's brother, taking care of one's brother.
And rain and bloodshed.
There's a lyric in here that talks about, you know, my brother, no matter his color, he's my brother through God. And these are these things that, like, I wish that the Christians really, at least in the United States, would get. And, you know, in the chat room, someone's going, wow, the Christians over in Egypt aren't quite... aren't as crazy as our Christians. You got to remember, the Egyptian Christians, a lot of them are the Coptic Christians. The Coptics are, like, in history, probably one of the most abused and beaten of Christian sects in history. These people know what it's like to be beaten down. I remember a couple of years ago when Gail and I were still living in Sydney, there was some construction going on next door to the place where we lived. And they got chatting with the general contractor. And we had this really great conversation, and he was a Coptic Christian. And I talked about how I'm an atheist, and he actually said to me, he goes, I've never met an atheist before. And I looked at him and I said, yes, you have. You just didn't know it. There's a lot of us out there. And in a non-condescending way, he asked the classic question. And it's one of the few times I've been asked this question where I wasn't kind of offended. In a very curious and honest way, he asked me, well, where do you get your morality from? And I said, it's easy. I only have one chance to get it right. I don't have some bearded guy up in the sky with a laptop checking off my good and bad deeds. No, no, no. It's about you and me right here, right now. I do the right thing by you. because I would want you to do the right thing by me. And he's like, wow, that's amazing. He said, I didn't know that. And I went on to tell him my views on how I think religion in general is divisive. And in fact, I think it's maybe not racist, but any group that says we are chosen and you are not, that's divisive. You are saying you are better than someone else. And in the Coptic situation, they weren't the right kind of Christian in many instances. He accepted my reasoning, my thoughts, and it was a real eye-opener for him. And I use that if you know, that being probably my only experience having such a conversation with a Coptic Christian that I ever know, that I can never recall, I found him to be very open and a very peaceful guy. And I get the impression that this is probably what the majority of Coptics are like in Egypt. You know, they're not a majority over there. But I cannot get around the sights of people from one group defending the people from another faith, from their common attacker, which was Mubarak's private thugs. And, you know, Jim said it. The same thing I was saying with that song. You know, you can't stop running water. This just isn't gonna stop. Not until the regime is gone, or there's a horrible crackdown. I just don't see the crackdown happening. Because I think the eyes of the world are so on it and the story is continue to get out no matter how hard they tried to quash it, because it's all about this competing storyline. What's actually happening against the propaganda of the state. And for all intents and purposes, the people on the street are winning the battle of telling the story. For once. But it continues to hang that it could all get really bad at some stage. And I just hope that it doesn't. All right, we're going to take a little break here. Come back at the top of the hour. The phone line is open. I don't know if no one's tried the toll-free number yet. I'd love someone to try the toll-free number, and let's see if that's actually working today. It'd be fantastic if we got it for the last day that I'm covering this week. So, if you feel so inclined, please, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON, or on your own dime, 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811. And here's a little tune from Faith No More. Here's one from Mubarak and Soliman. The gentle art of making enemies. You're listening to the horn. Turn it up!
Preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, your fill-in host for the week, for most of it, at least. And it all keeps moving on. Now, Gail's about to send me some updates on what's going on in Egypt here, but one that I've gotten from Gail while we were off on the break, and I'll hopefully get the details about that pretty soon, is when I was on the phone with Jim, I had given the update about Egyptian state TV announced the high-profile activist Whale Ghonim said people should go home, which was an absolute lie. Well, Mr. Whale Ghonim was just or is currently being interviewed on Al Jazeera. It'll be very interesting to see what he has to say after the state media has put words in his mouth. And this could, you know, this is obviously one of those bloody moves to try and turn these different groups against one another. And again, I still just don't think it's going to work, y'all. I really don't. The only way Mubarak's going to stay is if he has a mad crackdown. It's the only thing that's going to... Sorry. The activist was going to be on Al Arabiya, not Al Jazeera. I stand corrected. Thank you, Gail. So it'll be very interesting to see. You know, it'll probably take a little while for the details of that conversation to come down. Just obviously due to the fact of having to get it translated and all of that. So it just continues to build up and build up and build up. I just don't see how he's going to be able to keep this up. As in Mubarak and the regime. I just don't see it. Don't see it. So, the phone line is open, folks. You got thoughts on what's going on? I have been so locked in on this. I haven't been doing much on American politics, to tell you the truth. But what I will do for the moment is actually go to something that Texas Betsy had sent me for yesterday for prayer meeting that I didn't get to, that I think is very, very interesting. Now, this is happening in Sweden. The question is it unjust to outlaw schools, even private religious ones, from teaching religious doctrines as though true? This isn't a conversation I expect to be hearing widely taken up in the United States anytime soon. But from a blog called CamelsWithHammers.com, it says Sweden is planning to make it illegal, even for private schools, to teach religious doctrines as true. Their context may be discussed, of course, but they will not be able to be presented as facts. Sounds reasonable to me. In The Guardian, Andrew Brown explains the issues involved and the ulterior motives which may explain the legislation. The Swedish government has announced plans to clamp down hard on religious education. It will soon become illegal even for private faith schools to teach religious doctrines as if they were true. Ah! We're going to go to the phones. Welcome to Head On. Is this David?
Yes, it is.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Good day. I didn't want to interrupt you with your stories that you were doing.
I just wanted
to tell you that the toll free number does not work.
Bugger. Oh well.
That's right.
Yeah. We'll work on it. It's the first time we've ever tried to do this port forward thing, and you know, it doesn't always work first go. We'll work on it for the next time I do this. Any thoughts on what's going on, man?
Well, my thoughts are a little bit different than yours, John, in the regard that I wish the best for the people of Egypt, but here's the thing, John. You cannot push this thing faster and faster, and that's what I hate about 24/7 media.
Yes.
And that goes for Al Jazeera, too. I mean, and even though Al Jazeera has great coverage, they want to see something happen, too. And that's the problem. Everyone wants to see something happen.
Yeah, I have, but I was noticing last night when I was going to bed, I put Al Jazeera on. And and they haven't been as 24/7 on it as they were. In fact, I watched, you know, like a whole hour news broadcast where updates from Egypt were just one story in there. And so I think they are pulling it back some, because I do think it was really feeding that kind of situation that you were talking about, and I think they might be a little bit conscious of that. And at least in the last few days, I've been seeing them kind of go, you know, there are other things happening in the world, but we are keeping a damn close eye on this. But I do agree with you. We have this thing where it's almost a spectator sport.
I'll tell you something. I think the people are should be having the military be their allies. I was listening to a report on how they said that communique one message that they put out to the people, it was rumored to be some propaganda, and there's a lot of talk in the town that they're wondering if the military is going to turn on them, and they're just waiting for that moment.
Yeah, well, Sparky's just saying here, CNN reports a couple thousand protesters have arrived at Egypt's presidential palace.
But see, John, here's the thing about this, and this is the problem with politics in general, and this is something that we all need to learn from. The minute you say a revolution is coming, you can't take it back, people. You can't.
Absolutely.
You said it already. Now, then you wait for that moment. And when that moment arrives, here's the point, people. When that moment arrives, you have to say, well, okay, so a revolution is here. What do I get out of it? And then you put out on the table what may be coming your way. But here's the problem. We live in a hyper dense media, 24/7 media that just barrages us everywhere.
Yeah.
And time, it doesn't work in that way, John. What I'm saying is the people are going to be more anxious and more anxious as the days go on. And this is why I think the factions are going to split. And let me give you an antidote like this. And I'll tell you why I'm thinking this way. My mom gave me a story. She was around in Italy. She lived in Italy around the time of Mussolini as a child.
Right.
And here's something that a lot of people don't think about. You see the pictures on the TV of Mussolini. But most of Italy didn't give a shit about Mussolini. What they did was they riled up the people enough, and they said, "Don't you care about Mussolini? Don't you care?" And they were like, "Man, I just got to tend to my goats, and I got to tend to my family.
Yeah.
Who the hell is this Mussolini?" And my mom told me a story. She remembers when her brother went through the door, and he was drunk, and he was 12 years old. And he had a flag for the revolution to oust Mussolini. And the point is this, John. The point is this. You look at Italy now. Mm-hmm. You look at Egypt now. You can't get the people's hopes up that things are going to be as this free democracy, this democracy for all. And that's what that's what politics fails in so many aspects, John. And you have to have that edge because if you look at Italy now, people, Berlusconi.
And he's as fascist as they come.
I know. And the point is this. The point is this. You're going to have those turns. You're going to have those moments. And here's the thing. There's going to be a vacuum when this is why my mom says she doesn't like the fact that Mubarak is going to leave in this fashion, because there's going to be this vacuum. She's very cynical. She thinks the CIA has something to do with it.
Well, I mean, I can't keep those kind of thoughts out of my head either, man. I mean, you know.
I know. I understand that. But here's the thing. This reminds me so much It reminds me. This reminds me of what happened last year with Iran. It was like an attempt, but this was like a success so far. But here's the point. The point is that, all right, so we get rid of Mubarak. Is Suleiman going to step in? That's what it looks like to me. Or Suleiman's henchmen.
Well, the people seem to not be, you know, Suleiman's not a suitable replacement. And see, this is where as I've been watching this, and I've been watching the way that, you know, I agree with you about the 24-hour media and all of that. But I do think that the Egyptian people on the ground are actually running the show, no matter what the media wants to do. And they have, what I see, have been organizing themselves where they can have these marches in waves so that they can sustain. They didn't stay, it just seems to me that they're being very smart about it. You know, they had that break mm-hmm. for a couple of days, but they still kept the core group there. And like I was saying to Jim before, you know, because this is actually a cross-section of society that we actually have, you know, mothers and children and all that out there,
mm-hmm.
these people got to take care of themselves at some point, so they can't be expected to stay there full-time all the time. But they're maintaining it in a siege mentality. And this is where I find, I agree with everything that you're saying, man, about the vacuum, all of that. But
yeah.
In my mind, the only way to even have a chance at this ending in a way that is positive all the way around is that Mubarak has to go and we have to run the risk. Because, you know, like we talk about, you know, worry about the CIA getting involved and all that kind of
mm-hmm.
thing. You know, this one really needs to be real. I do not see with how, because the Iranian one, see, I think that there's a different view of the Iranian people than the Egyptian people in the American mind.
Mm.
The Iranian people seriously don't need all that democracy in the American mind to a further extent than they believe that too much democracy is possible for the Egyptians. So I think if the world had backed up
mm-hmm.
in spirit the Iranians the way that they have backed up the Egyptians, there may have been a slightly different result. But the interesting thing, though, is in Iran, they seem to be they were so much more bloodthirsty early. You know, and Mubarak's private police got fought back in the beginning, and you know, when the violence stopped in the city and the cameras were all in the cities, violence gets reported in the outer towns because they're trying to go where the cameras aren't. And I just really think that the people are not believing them, because every time they find these people, they're turning them over to the military and going, you know, there's their copper ID. And if you're in the military, man, and see, here's the other thing. I know we worry about the military thing, but one of the dynamics that I can't get out of my head in this, you know, we have the actual police, and we have the military. Now the police are, you know, pretty much Mubarak's private frickin' goons, and the Egyptian word for them is like goon.
Right.
But the military much more come from the rest of the population. The guys that are down there, you know, that have been, after they've been ordered, you know, live fire, go use live fire, they've said they haven't. And I think the military are seeing their brothers and sisters, their mums and dads out there. And Gail's saying here, problem military takeover is getting them to relinquish power again afterwards. I totally agree. I'm just trying to figure out how do you help facilitate this without being looked at as, you know, manipulating from the outside? How do you get him out if he won't go himself, if the people aren't armed? And I think that that's a good thing, because if the people were armed like Americans, they all would have been shooting each other dead by now. Right? So the thing is that they need to stay unarmed, because it's the only way that they can win. So who do you turn to? Who do you turn to if the police are actually the henchmen of the government? How do you do it, other than hoping that your own military says, these people are fucked, they're not listening to the people, we need to serve the people, get them out, and say, we're only doing this for this fixed amount of time, and we are relinquishing? I think it's possible. I think it's possible.
Personally, I don't think you can hold the factions together. And that's my cynical side saying that. But when you look at how much people have to endure, and then you look at that go day by day by day, and then you look at the fact of the media coverage and everything that they're hearing is being blared at them one way or the other, in a fashion that makes it really, really visible, in a sense where they don't have to wait for tomorrow's newspaper. It's right in front of them. So if they say a headline that's on the radio, or things can easily go south so quick now.
No argument.
I'm on the side of the factions. They can't hold for very much longer. And Mubarak's regime is just gonna wait it out. And they're just gonna wait until these factions, they get pissed and get angry in the streets and say, well, you promised this and you promised that. Nothing's happening. And you know, and when all that push and shove comes to happen, I mean, that's when things are gonna start to get really chaotic, in a sense. And I think that's part of the problem with that's going to be part of the problem with revolutions. This is kind of like a incubator test for revolutions in the 24/7 digital real response trigger time media we live in now.
Well, you know, on kind of, you know, this situation, and Gail will tell me whose piece it was. But a couple of days ago, there was a talk about how one of the dynamics that has fundamentally changed is the fact that, like, in this uprising here, it's leaderless, right? It's basically leaderless. It's been a very lateral type of organization. There's been no head down kind of thing. And and this is a fundamental shift that we're going through at this moment in history, is the people, you know, aside from when the internet was cut, have been beating the 24-hour news media at their own game by feeding them the very content that they haven't been able to get themselves. And this breakdown of top-down organizations makes them much harder to break up, because there isn't a leader to take down to pull the group down.
I think the stamina and the patience thing is a factor that a lot of people are they're not weighing in entirely. And I think again, that's one of the reasons why I think a lot of this it can't hold for much longer.
Man, you know, I have the same concerns as you. I really do. And I guess I have this kind of vibe that, and this has been Gail and I for the past couple of weeks, that we have to watch this to pay witness to this, you know, to be able to tell this story 20 years from now. And the piece that Gail was talking about, it was a piece by Paul Mason at BBC Newsnight blog. He called it Horizontalism. He said, horizontalism kills, vertical hierarchy stone dead. And I really recommend this piece because I think he does a really great breakdown of, you know, you and I talk about the music industry all the time, how the old guard really is dead and they don't know it yet, and the new model is still an experiment.
Right.
But the new model is, even in its floundering and unorganized fashion, is beating the old guard at the game. And I think that that's what this Paul Mason piece kind of points to. And it's not just Egypt. You know, it's Tunisia. And, you know, I guarantee you the Saudis are just freaking out. And overnight there was a Twitter rumor going around that the king had died. And it took a long time for that one to be pulled back. And then Gail mentioned to me, she goes, yeah, and oil prices spiked on that news. And I said, was it that news or was it that leak that you and I started talking about yesterday? That the head geologist for Aramco has basically backed up the numbers on peak oil, and that the Saudis haven't been real honest about their supplies because there's no third party verification on their claims of what their stores are. You know, it's
right.
we just have to believe them. But you know, this bit coming out, you know, so like we had this rumor that the king had died. Could you imagine? If the king of Saudi Arabia, because he's supposedly not a well man, carved
well,
in the
know,
middle of this, I think.
Well, you know, speaking of the Middle East, they have they just announced. I don't know if you were awake during that time, but they announced big Bahrain protests are going to be scheduled around February 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a lot of solidarity protests being planned around the joint and have been going on for the last week or so. And this is where, and see, this again is why, you know, I think this event has such wider impact on the entire region. And this is inspiring people. This is inspiring people in these countries, you know, to lose their fear. And see, this is the other thing, man, about them losing their momentum.
Mm-hmm.
I really do feel that on the 25th of January, this population lost its fear. And that is crucially important to the ability to just stand firm.
The only question is when it comes back, because it will come back. The fear will be taken in place, whether it's through poverty or depression or just a fear of being... interrogation, jailed, tortured,
yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you know, the other thing is that I think when you have a movement like this, and you have the difference of protesters come out there, and if they don't get what they're after, what they're impassioned about, I mean, that's when the radical fundamentalists and religious nuts come in, and they start, well, you know, this is promised to you by so and so God 8.2.0.
Yeah.
And I think, again, I think it's a win-win situation for the radical fundamentalists when you have an uprising like this.
I don't know, David. That sounds like kind of knee-jerk reaction fear to me, and I hate to say that, but I see, and this is the thing that bugs me, like, when I watch a lot of the Western media on this. You know, they're still doing this argument of, you know, their security or ours. And it's not our choice, man. You know?
Oh, I agree with you, but what I'm saying is it's not knee-jerk for me, because probably if I was in a situation of... of that kind of chaos and of that kind of emotional despair, and I didn't have anything to cling to for the future, I could very easily be taken in by a fundamentalist of any stripe, whether it was Christian or religious. I mean, it just depends on that situation. And what I'm saying is when you have revolutions, you always look to, I mean, it's such a great gimmick. I mean, because they say, well, they wouldn't lie to us. They're spiritual and they're faithful. And I think that's, I mean, as sad as it is, I think that's the last refuge, you know? When you have nothing, you turn to God. You turn to what, I mean, that's, I think that's part of the failure of bringing atheism to the world, because there's this phantom that they can turn to. And even if it's not true, it's this myth that they can cling to for another day. So...
Like I said, I'm just kind of watching and hoping that...
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. And I see where you're coming from, and I guess I'm going on the vibe that I have to be positive about this, because if I'm generally negative about it, I'm going to be working against them. I'm trying to be very, very open to the realities of things, but I... do think these people need cheerleading?
Well, here's the question. I mean, when they do get the switch that they're after, and it's most likely not going to be the person they want, John.
Yeah.
Most likely going to be like a Dick Cheney or something, and that's the problem. People don't look ahead in terms of like that. They say, oh well. We're going to get rid of Mubarak, and then we're going to do this and that and that. And, you know, there's already people planning regimes, and they're like 20 steps ahead of you. And see, that's part of the problem of being ecstatic in a revolution, John, because people take advantage of you in that way. And eventually that well of ecstaticism and joy and that emotion you feel, that is drained, and something else has to be replaced with.
Frustration.
So that's
and anger.
Where I'm at with that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is that people need to ask that question. It's like, you wish for Mubarak to be gone. Okay, that's fine. Who are you going to replace that with? And are the people going to be satisfied with that? And if they're not, do you think he's going to be easy to remove? I don't think so.
Gail's just sending me some tweets here. Two tweets from Dima Khatib about the misrepresentation of Wael Ghanim. Regime is clearly trying to make Ghanim look like the leader of the revolution, using his words against revolution. And the second tweet says, this revolution has no leader, has no head. Regime will not succeed in changing that. Regime prefers a head easier to strike.
Yeah, I heard they already put the propaganda that he was that he was saying that, and then they you know, they trounced that.
Yeah, and
but
and,
you know, once it but what matters, John, is the first person out the gate, because you can't take it back.
Oh yeah.
But maybe here's hope springs eternal again. Maybe the people are really wise to the media game.
Oh, I think they are,
and they don't take anything.
And there's 1,000 people around the state TV station now, and there's a couple of thousand around Parliament, as far as I understand. So they're not.
John, let me ask you a serious question. Seriously, do you really think with that many people surrounding buildings, that is going to have a mob mentality? It's just human. It's nature. It's not human nature. Excuse me. It's nature. The probability factor. When you have those emotions raging, and you have and you have everything, and you think that the world is falling apart, and it just very may be for you. I don't blame anyone for turning to anger.
Well, okay. Say, you know, we get you know, there's a couple thousand at the palace right now. Say that gets to be, you know, 10,000 people, and they storm the gates.
You know,
Is that the best outcome?
John, again, I'm not there. You're not there. Nobody's there. It's that moment, you know, when the adrenaline is pumping. I don't know what I do. And anyone saying that they would know what they would do when they're at the end of their leash, you're lying to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You are lying to me, people. If you say I know what I do in that situation, no, you don't, because you have to be there at that moment. You have to be living that moment right there. And the best honest answer to me is what I just told you, which is I don't know, because I've never been at the end of my rope in that way.
And you know, man, I think that is the most honest way to express it, because none of us know. That's the whole thing. And why I resist going down preconceived notions of some things, you know, going, you know, harping too much on, oh, you know, what happens in the vacuum. I can't be afraid of the change. And like Gail also put here, you know, you were talking about, you know, they install a Dick Cheney. We're calling him Silly Man. Silly Man is the Dick Cheney. And the people have already said that they won't accept him.
Yeah, John, I understand that, but, you know, things like that change really, really quickly. We won't accept this person. We won't. Okay, whatever. See you later.
Well, I don't know. We'll, like I said, time is going to tell. That's it. We don't know.
I understand completely, and it's just, like I said, you know, the probability of someone getting violent is, it's not in our favor, John, for that to be nonviolent. And we shouldn't really look down on someone if they do act in a violent manner, because
I won't.
Things just get crazy.
I won't, you know. If, you know, these people have already been provoked. The fact that they haven't retaliated in any serious form already is a statement to their tenacity. Now, that tenacity could fall apart. And, you know, when it comes down to, holy crap, they're really out to fucking kill us. Yeah. You turn around and start firing back. You turn around and fight back. I am a peaceful person, but I'm I don't believe in being completely spineless. You know,
I hear you.
So I'm with you there too.
I just want to know the footage that you're seeing, the video of the palace and the TV station. Are there any torches being lit up or anything like that, or just?
I don't actually have the video in front of me. I couldn't. Just kind of wasn't technically possible in here. Gail's watching.
Right.
Gail's watching it in the front of the house and coming back and sending me updates. Telling me what's going on, because if I had the screen going here, I would have so much trouble just maintaining the show at all, because, you know, I was when I woke up this morning, it all seemed to be like game on. I'm like, on holy crap, I really would just like to sit and watch this, you know, because it does have that feeling that any second something is gonna come, something's coming. What it's going to be, we have no idea. But like you're saying, you know, we're definitely hitting that boiling point. And it all depends on whether, you know, which way it's going to boil over.
I know which way the neocons want it to go. I know which way the neocons want it to go.
You know, when I saw that quote from that Israeli guy, you know, saying, you know, we support Mubarak because he wants Palestine to go hungry but not starve.
Wow.
And that quote was all over Twitter. So, and you know what I find Gail's sending me some other link. She's saying here, on another subject, war criminal Ron Paul Backers crash Cheney Rumsfeld reunion. Huh? I gotta
well,
go
that's interesting.
Hang on a second, David. Let me get this page loaded. Because, I mean, you know, we're kind of getting...
I wanted to ask you about that, about something regarding that. I don't know if you know the Ralph Nader and the Ron Paul Progressive Libertarian Alliance. What do you think about that?
I heard about that, and I find it a bit weird.
I think it strikes a sense of desperation on Nader's part to be visible in some way with the headline. Like, I got to do something to stay in. I got to stay in part of the headlines. You know, and I think. I mean, I can understand what he wants to do and how he wants to have an alliance with the so-called other side, but I don't know. It's really a lot of differences in worldview.
Oh yeah, I mean there are a couple of fundamental things that the two ideologies can share, but
right.
Then when you start drilling down into specifics on stuff, they then go, you know, like polar opposite. So I don't really.
I think liberal is more possible and probable, and libertarian.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the way I look at it.
Absolutely. You know, is this you know, if this ends up being somehow a catalyst for the ability for third parties to become part of the system, maybe this could turn into something being positive, even though it doesn't make much sense. You know, once you drill down past level one, as far as I see it, but I've just
well, you know, before I go, I do have to mention that story that I sent to you regarding the heartbeat bell.
Oh,
and I'll give
yeah.
you my
oh yeah,
I'll give you my take on that.
Okay, because I haven't mentioned it at all, so you're gonna have to tell people what it is.
Well, the heartbeat bill. Is a legislation in Ohio that basically makes it clear that fetuses within 6 weeks of having a faint heartbeat to ban all those types of abortions. And I'll tell you something, John. That's one step next to someone having a thought about having a baby and then saying, you know what, I'm thinking of having a baby, but no. And then someone coming to say, aha, you wanted to have a baby.
Well, it's basically...
You're going to have that baby now.
It's
like that pre-con thought.
Yeah, it's setting the window of opportunity to be impossible. You know, a woman wouldn't know. You know, at that point, it's creating...
It makes me...
That's bullshit.
you know, but before I go, it makes me wish I had a time machine and I went back to the days of Virgin Mary in the manger and said, here's some birth control pills. You may want to take them.
Hey, Mary.
I know you're not active, but hey, please, you'd be doing us a good job for the future.
Hey, Mary, I want to take you on a roller coaster ride. Don't worry. Don't ask any questions. Just come for a ride.
something like that. I mean, you know what's scary? In my cynical lens, I can see some dumbass state passing that law.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it's got a heartbeat of life.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an amoeba.
And it's amazing the fact that, you know, the problem is that it's so easy to, you know, you have people like Randall Terry and they're experts at turning that propaganda and mixing that theatrical emotion in it and getting all a lot of people who are on the Bible thumping side all worked up.
Oh yeah, well, just the wording of the bill, you know, they always word these things so it makes it hard on the surface to vote against these things. You know, they voted against the heartbeat bill. You know, you can already see.
And, you know, here's the other thing. It's also this sense of
savior and missionary work. Oh, I can do this. I can save them. And it gets them, you know, it puts this whole delusional mind state in their head that, oh, you know, you are actually making lives better for people. Now, probably that's like a percentage, like 50%, and the other 50% is completely off the farm, as they say. And I mean, the whole thing about it to me is, you know, it's such a non-starter for a conversation, because the emotional traps that when you get into this type of discussion, it's so ripe, filled with of numerous ways where they just play on your theatrical heartstrings.
Yeah.
And pretend like they really do care about humanity and the future of it. And it's, I'm still amazed at how much leeway we give abortionist activists in this country. It's amazing to me that we can just, I think there needs to be like a messaging convention where we need to find a proper response for this, and somehow we can get back on the rational train tracks. But as I look across this country and regarding abortion issues and religious issues, I don't know, I see this specter coming up. And you know, that brings me to an interesting point before I go. Kevin Smith's movie Red State is coming out in March.
Yes.
And it looks like he may be a prophet of his times with this one.
Yeah, you exposed me to the clip, to the promo for that, and it's just,
yeah,
just absolutely
And I wish the best. Here's the thing about it. I wish the best for Kevin Smith and his family. And I hear, and this is just the one last thing, I'll let you go, I hear he's actually doing a new model to pay for the distribution. He's actually going from theater to theater, and he's doing a Q&A at the theaters. And you pay, I think, $70 to go see Kevin Smith. So it's like the old-fashioned ride into town with your film reel.
Yeah.
And play it on the projector. And he says he hopes that he can do this for the future, because he's at his wit's end when it comes to distributors, and he just wants to for people to see the film rather than deal with all the politics.
Right. So
and he thinks he can get enough. I mean, $70, I'll admit, Kevin, I mean, why not 50? But hey, if you say 70 for Q&A and watching a screening of the film, it's tempting. I might do it, but
I could see throwing down for that, especially, you know, I think he could get enough people, and once he's actually, you know, gone around and done that a few times and maybe taken care of some of his cost and whatnot, then, you know, maybe some wider, you know, free release kind of thing can go on. Again, this is same idea, you know, we've talked about the music industry for years now, Dave. Same idea. It's the new model hasn't been built yet. They're coming up with it. You know, we got our Trent Reznors, and we got all these people that are finding ways to do it that are more direct. Again, this whole horizontalism, man. We're getting rid of the top down, you know? I think that horizontalism thing plays right into all of this. You know, there's no more having to go to the distributor to get it down to all the people.
Right.
Here he's going, no. I go to the people come to me. And it's
well,
direct.
It's
going
to be interesting to see what kind of reaction it gets from the religious right establishment, and what kind of threats he gets as well.
Oh yeah, he's gonna have a rough road, but he's been there before. I mean, he caught so much shit
sure
for
with
dogma
and everything. Yeah.
And again, the religious people must not have read the disclaimer at the beginning. This is fantasy. This is a comedy. You know, written by a devout Catholic. Hello.
Yeah, that's interesting that people would get riled up over a satire film like that when they really should get riled up over something like Passion of the Christ, which is completely science fiction, if yeah. Jesus does exist.
Yeah, and Dogma was such a great little kind of... comedy is a vehicle to describe how faith is portrayed or the way people's faith no longer brings them joy or anything positive. It's like a burden. And, you know, this was a guy talking about how he feels that his own faith has lost its way from all the good that it should be doing. And instead of accepting that message, they're going and shooting the frickin' messenger because, well, they have some hippie guy with a New Jersey accent that swears every second word.
I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, so, yeah, I think we've lost our way where it concerns spirituality and critical thinking. If those two can be combined, it might be.
There was a time in history where the churches were the bastions of science, and then sometime that changed. They became foes. And we have to get back to kind of either the way we were, or, you know, understanding that, you know, the guy who does the Nova show, you know, he said, you know, doesn't matter how many of you all disagree with me, what I'm telling you is still true. My facts are still true.
And on that note, you have to get back to your stack.
I will, man. Thanks very much. Always a ball, man. And thanks so much for everything that you do. And we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All right. Later, John.
All right, man. And that was David from Maine, pop culture correspondent, and my resident cynic, who, you know, tries to put my positive, you know, be a counter to my positivity. Okay, Lottie's correcting me. The churches were never bastions of science, but certain priests and ministers were. Fair enough. I stand corrected. But the dynamic was a little different in the past. At least as, in my opinion. But I wasn't there. So, anyway, I want to get back to this. I'm going to do this real quick before we go to the top of the hour break. Gail sent this to me before. From Raw Story, the title is War Criminal. Ron Paul backers crash Cheney-Rumsfeld reunion. Supporters of Libertarian Republican Ron Paul shouted down former Vice President Dick Cheney at a conservative conference Thursday in a sign of growing foreign policy rift on the American right. Cheney has appeared on the first day of the 2011 Conservative Political Action Conference to introduce Donald Rumsfeld, the former Bush-era defense secretary who was scheduled to receive this year's Defender of the Constitution Award. That didn't sit well with Team Paul. Supporters of Representative Ron Paul, who have long called for an end to the U.S. foreign wars, "Where's Bin Laden?" one heckler shouted as Cheney stood at the podium to introduce Rumsfeld. "War criminal," another shouted out, prompting a heated reaction from the crowd. The specter of a Republican vice president being called a war criminal at a conservative conference was so unexpected that it prompted Talking Points memos Evan McMorris-Santoro to describe it as what a Cheney-Rumsfeld hug at the Netroots Nation convention might look like. Holy crap. Defender of the Constitution, activist Justin Bradfield told McMorris-Santoro, let's see, he expanded the Defense Department more than the Defense Secretary, and he enforced the Patriot Act. Reporting from the Washington, D.C. event, Santoro estimated that the number of Libertarian Paul supporters has grown from previous years, an assertion backed by Bradfield, who suggests that half the attendees were Libertarians like himself. Rumsfeld's Defender of the Constitution Award has been ridiculed by liberal anti-war activists and Libertarians alike, who argue that Rumsfeld and other Bush administration officials were among the most dismissive of constitutional rights. See, there are things that we can see eye to eye on with the Libertarians. It's just finding a line where we go, yeah, but all that stuff where everybody's on their own and fuck the poor and all that kind of crap, we can't back that. But this stuff, They're just as right as we are. Rumsfeld, who was Secretary of Defense under George W. Bush from 2001 to 2006, oversaw the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan. He was replaced by current Defense Secretary Robert Gates after a number of generals called for his resignation. In 2005, he was sued by the American Civil Liberties Union for authorizing the torture and abuse of detainees at facilities in Iraq and Afghanistan. The ACLU claimed that the Constitution prohibited the Secretary of Defense from adopting or permitting policies of cruelty against civilians in U.S. military custody, but Rumsfeld claimed he could not be held legally liable for the torture. The case was eventually dismissed. Rumsfeld recently released a memoir in which he said the biggest regret was not stepping down after the Abu Ghraib prisoner abuse scandal. He said he should have forced then-President George W. Bush to accept his resignation over the revelations of abuse by U.S. military guards, blah, 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 blah. I think I actually might have video, which might have audio of the shouting down. So let's try this. Let's see if this will work. Ooh, buffer, buffer, buffer. This could be fun. Video is from Mediaite. It's buffering. Will it work?
And so we brought an additional presenter, the former Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney.
The minions whistling for Satan. Holy crap. Here comes Cheney. Darth Dickhead.
Thank you all very much.
He looks like the Walking Dead now. In the middle of that, there are people screaming war criminal.
Mercy. All right, sit down and shut up.
There it goes.
Usual spirited exercise.
That looks as though they're being dragged down.
Thank you. Thank you very much for all your great effort. It's always great to come back to CPAC because there's so many folks that are absolutely devoted to the nation.
Yeah, devoted to fucking raping the nation, as much death as possible. Pretty clear there, though. Some pretty unsupportive people of old Dickie Darth there at CPAC. Very, very, very interesting. I hadn't been able to preview any of that audio there off the video, but you could hear it very clear, people screaming war criminal, which I find fascinating. So anyway, we're going to take a little break and come back for the top of the next hour. Here's another tune for the Egyptians. A little bit of spiritual boost, maybe. There's a little bit of suicidal tendencies. You can't bring me down. You're listening to Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. We'll be back for the final hour of Head On with Bob Kincaid after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, your fill-in host for another hour this week. And then, sorry, I can't cover tomorrow because I'm doing a flood. I'm working a flood benefit for the Queenslanders tomorrow up at a place called The Entrance on the central coast of New South Wales. Should be fun. A few local bands, you know. Got like three stages to do. I'm only running one, thankfully. The main one. Not really very big, but it's a great little council gig. Great little council venue on the water. Seriously, if you're near, you know, you're obviously probably near your computer because you're listening to this. Open up a tab, go to Google Maps, and search The Entrance, New South Wales. And just have a look. And you'll see down there's a foreshore. And where they say the pelican feeding is, that's right next to the stage where I'll be tomorrow. So, hey, any of the listeners in Australia got nothing on tomorrow? Come on up to The Entrance. Help us make some money to help the flood victims in Queensland. And now in Victoria, and I think it might be turning into an all-encompassing Australia benefit. Because, man, this place has been getting hammered the last couple of weeks. And I think Melbourne got more torrential rains over the last day or so, and they've just been getting all the water from Queensland from the cyclone and the floods from the past like 2-3 weeks, finally coming down the Murray Darling and hammering down into them. So it's just, it's really, really, really pretty full on. I'll tell you. And David's just reading my mind. First of all, I have to say thank you. We did get a few donations in yesterday. Every little bit helps. Still way, 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 way behind this month. So if we can get some more in there, it'd be really, really great. I don't know exactly how else to put it, but the bills have to be paid, and, you know, even though Bob's not been on and you haven't been getting the full complement of programming, the bills are still the same. And it's a short month, too. Talk about making it even harder for everybody involved. You know, it's a short month. So please, head on radionetwork.com. Down the sidebar, there's the contribution form. You can even set up a reoccurring payment of 10, 15, 20 bucks if you can do such a thing. Or a one-timer is great. Right now, we really, really, really need some injection of funds, because without y'all supporting us, we can't do this. So with that, I'll leave that there with you. We did get a response yesterday. I'd love to see about double that response today. I know it would really, really help Bob relax. And Gail's just sent me a joke from Twitter. Says, damn, girl, you've got a Mubarak. In other words, an ass that won't quit. Nice. See, I was telling you yesterday how via the Al Jazeera coverage, one of the things that was discussed early on is, and it's lost in translation, the wonderful humor and poetry of the Egyptian people. And when you translate these things, of course, the poetry goes out the window. Some of the comedy stays intact, like that one. Damn, girl, you've got a Mubarak, an ass that won't quit. Right? Love it. It's that's beautiful. The chants have been all things like that, but because we're all ignorant English-speaking dorks, we don't get how beautiful this is, how clever. Because I think if the English-speaking population could get that feeling from hearing the chants, it would probably put a very, very different spin on things for them internally. I don't know, just my opinion. If you heard them protesting and taking the piss out of him, and not, you know, screaming, hang him, seeing that they're actually just laughing at him because he's a joke. There you go. In the chat room, Lottie's got something here. Breaking news, NORAD. NORAD closed? Explosives team on the way, 10th of February, 2011. We're learning that what appeared to be a false alarm is being taken more seriously than we previously reported at NORAD. We were told by the El Paso County Sheriff's Office that a bad battery, set off an explosives detector. Peterson Air Force Base has issued the alert. The road to Cheyenne Mountain Air Force Station is closed temporarily after the detection system tested positive on a vehicle at the gate near the installation visitor center. An explosive ordnance detection team and military working bomb dog detection team, dog bomb detection team from the 21st Space Wing at Peterson Air Force Base is en route to the scene to investigate. Holy crap! A bomb at NORAD? Really? Holy crap. Got any links for that, Lottie? Love to find out more on that one. Wow. NORAD closed. The road to NORAD is closed. Originally thought to be a bad battery. Yeah, I understand your question marks there, Lottie. And he says that that's all so far. So what was the source from that? What are you watching, Lottie? I love having these one-sided conversations with the chat room. he's looking for links, and wow. Okay, that's kind of freaky. All right, I'm going to go and have a little look on that myself. And yes, Gail found it. Just a sec, and I'll try and get it into the chat. Newsfirst5.com. Let's see. I'm just trying to. It seems to be the same press statement as I read before. Our first responders are equipped and ready to handle these types of situations, said Colonel Rusty Wilson. Of course, his name is Rusty. From the 721st Mission Support Group Commander, we take installation protection seriously, and until we can verify the truck's contents, we are proceeding with caution. Right. Well, this seems to be... Yeah. Lottie found the same link, which is in the chat room at the moment. And if you're not in the chat room, I don't understand why you are not. You just have to go to headonradionetwork.com, click on the chat room link, and it's a really quick little registration, name and an username and an email, all done. Yesterday, when I was having a bit of an Australian theme to the music selection, I was mentioning that my mate Richard Clapton has a new album about to come out, and the new album's called Rewired. And when I was doing some gigs with him a few months ago, the band was coming back from sessions just going, dude, this is just amazing. And the first track that they put out is this song called Liberty Bell. And if I'm not mistaken, Richard told me this was kind of a response to a lot of what's gone on over the last few years. Now, I'm going to try and stream this from Richard's website. And I'm going to go see if I can find any more on this NORAD thing, and just check up on a couple things with Egypt. So check this track out. Like I said, Richard's one of my favorite songwriters that Australia has ever produced, and this guy just knows how to write, and he writes great lyrics. And this song rocks! This is awesome live. Liberty Bell, Richard Clapton.
Working every single day to make some other guy a rich man. Working for that overtime pay and doing every job that you can. You're working for those mystery motives. You're working for the government.
great track. It's an absolutely brilliant track. You got to ring hard on that Liberty Bell. You got to fight for your own freedom. Richard's awesome. In my mind, Richard is one of the geniuses of being able to pen a lyric. Now, I just got this from Lottie in the chat room, a statement from the White House on Egypt. And the statement reads, "The Egyptian people have been told that there was a transition of authority, but it is not yet clear that that transition is immediate, meaningful, or sufficient. Too many Egyptians remain unconvinced that the government is serious about a genuine transition to democracy, and it is responsibility of the government to speak clearly to the Egyptian people and the world. The Egyptian government must put forward a credible, concrete, and unequivocal path towards genuine democracy. They have not yet seized that opportunity. As we have said from the beginning of this unrest, the future of Egypt will be determined by the Egyptian people, but the United States has also been clear that we stand for a set of core principles. We believe that the universal rights of the Egyptian people must be respected and their aspirations must be met. We believe that the transition must immediately demonstrate irreversible political change and a negotiated path to democracy. To that end, we believe that the emergency law should be lifted. We believe that meaningful negotiations with broad opposition in Egyptian civil society should address the key questions confronting Egypt's future, protecting the fundamental rights of all citizens, revising the constitution and other laws to demonstrate irreversible change, and jointly developing a clear roadmap to elections that are free and fair. We therefore urge the Egyptian government to move swiftly to explain the changes that have been made and to spell out in clear and unambiguous language the step-by-step process that will lead to democracy and the representative government that the Egyptian people seek. Going forward, it will be essential that the universal rights of the Egyptian people be respected. There must be restraint by all parties. Violence must be forsaken. It is imperative that the government not respond to the aspirations of their people with repression or brutality. The voices of the Egyptian people must be heard. The Egyptian people have made it clear that there is no going back to the way things were. Egypt has changed, and its future is in the hands of the people. Those who have exercised their right to peaceful assembly represent the greatness of the Egyptian people and are broadly representative of Egyptian society. We have seen young and old, rich and poor, Muslim and Christian join together and earn the respect of the world through their nonviolent calls for change. In that effort, young people have been at the forefront and a new generation has emerged. They have made it clear that Egypt must reflect their hopes, fulfill their highest aspirations, and tap their boundless potential. In these difficult times, I know the Egyptian people will persevere, and they must know that they will continue to have a friend in the United States of America. Well, it'll be a really, really nice change for us to be backing the people and not the military, in my opinion, and I think in most people's opinions. But that is the most recent statement after Mubarak apparently went back on whatever conversations had been had with the White House previously. Wow, it's all going off. Okay, another... Switching back to the NORAD story, sorry, that's the same one. Never mind. So it appears that it was a garbage truck that set this thing off, and very little new information is at hand. Now, the phone line is open, so please, we got about another 39 minutes or so before we clear the way for Mr. Rick Smith. And he's back in his home studio. I was listening to a bit of him yesterday, talking about the Green Jobs Conference and whatnot, and it was great stuff, as he always does. So get in on it. Got a little time left. Unfortunately, the toll-free did not materialize on my end, so it's 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811. 11, and that was Sparky. I correct that press release from the White House that came via Sparky Dunk. Thanks, Sparky. That is the coolest thing about what we all do together here as the community that is the Horn. You all are everywhere, and doing research while I'm gabbing, and you send it back to me, and I get to pump it out. And Gail is just having suddenly a confusion of direction with the information flow. She's been in the front room taking stuff off of Twitter and passing it on to me. And then all of a sudden, I was getting stuff, and she was having to turn around and get it onto Twitter. And so, I mean, like, this is that horizontalism, right? That I was talking about before. We're no longer looking to get this information to someone at the top to get it down to the rest of the minions. We're going directly from one another. It's like all just it's horizontalism. It's kind of like finally being given a term for something that we kind of knew and understood, you know? And I mean, that's the big thing about the internet in general. And why things like net neutrality and all that kind of stuff are so bloody important. So that we can maintain this horizontalism. Where we can communicate with one another without having to go through through somebody else's filter. Or as little of someone else's filter as possible. You know, many little voices add up to drown out the big voice with the big megaphone. Or can. It appears that seems to be what's happening now. I don't know if I passed this on. Gail is saying that there's a couple thousand around the palace at the moment, and they're setting up for the big march on the palace tomorrow. So it appears that they're just getting themselves set. But like David was saying, we're now at that really scary moment where this could really go either way. And I read the White House statement as being, you know, pretty good in political speak. There's a little bit of weasel language in there, but not too much. But I think the direct declaration to end the emergency law, the emergency powers that have been in force for 30 years to be lifted, that could make a real difference. No one knows, no one can predict. So it also means that we can't predict, you know, we can't predict even what's going to happen next. So I think it bodes well not to be making predictions of what happens after what happens next and what happens after what happens after what happens next. Because it would be too easy to go down the line of virtually anything turning bad. And coming up with preconceived notions of what will happen as opposed to what can happen. I think there's a lot of... I mean, this whole thing is just an unknown. Absolutely incredible. So I'm just looking for a little bit of a tune to take a bottom of the hour break here. I think I want something Australian. I'm looking. Here we go. No, I won't do that. I was about to play. I would have played what I was going to play if Agnes is around. Because I know it's one that she really digs. But, it's all going to be a big wait and see at the moment. It's all going to be a big wait and see. And, haven't seen too much of this, but it was announced that actually Twitter has approached Facebook and Google for possible buyout. And, of course, that always makes everybody nervous. You know, we don't like seeing all this consolidation. But the timing of this, I'm wondering if you know, Twitter really has never found a big way to kind of monetize itself. You know, they do have where you can buy trends and stuff like that, which I didn't even know that you could do until yesterday, I think, because I'm not the most Twitter-friendly person. Gail translates Twitter for me. I'm wondering if they're finding themselves strained at the moment. You know, if they just, there's a whole section of the world that's utilizing Twitter to communicate. And with all the increased traffic, well, that's going to cost them bandwidth. I mean, there's just no way to get around it. I mean, we know we are an internet content provider. We know what it is to have bandwidth costs. So, you know, are they looking to make this happen? Oh, Sparky. State Department launches Arabic Twitter. Oh, under feed. Very interesting. All right, Gail, you're going to have to get this one into your thing. Let's see. The State Department, already pretty good at the social media thing, is now using Twitter to transmit its thoughts to the Arab world in Arabic. This is from the Washington Post, from Ed O'Keefe. Foggy Bottom is using @USA_BIL, capital A, lowercase RABY, which is in English means USA in Arabic. The feed's description says it's the Department of State Arabic Media Hub. The U.S. Foreign Ministry has recognized the historic role of social media in the Arab world, and we want to be part of your conversations, says one of the first tweets. James is the Arabic speaker, Ed is not. The account has about 300 followers by mid-afternoon. Notably, the State Department appears to be using modern standard Arabic, a formal high-register Arabic that is the most common form of expression for media outlets, public and religious officials. Younger Arab social media users are breaking away from the strict formal expression and use both Arab and Latin alphabet dialect. The State Department has several social media voices of its own. Lead spokesman P.J. Crowley is a frequent and witty Twitter user, @P.J. Crowley, who once warned Americans not to travel to North Korea by noting that the U.S. had only so many former presidents available to rescue them. At the start of the Obama administration, the department employed two active users, Jared Cohen, and now serves as director of Google Ideas, and Alec Ross, who remains as Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton's senior advisor for innovation, both quickly become among the most followed by anyone working for the U.S. government. So there you go. So they've gone in, so now the State Department is trying to utilize the tools that the movement is using. And I guess this is part of making clear what I think was pretty clear on that in that press statement. I mean, anybody disagree with me that the White House press statement was, you know, in political speak, pretty clear? It's got to go, and they got to come up with a definitive transition plan. Period. There really wasn't too much weasel room in all of that. I mean, you know, so this just gets more and more fascinating by the day. So anyway, we're gonna take the last break before we finish up tonight. Like I said, you got about 30 minutes to get in on things. The number is 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811. And we'll be right back. And I don't know, this is kind of another one kind of fun on lyrically. The Tubes, and Talk to You Later.
As I mentioned near the close of the last record, this record you are now playing is another example of the completion backward principle. If you can possibly manage the time, Please play both sides at one meeting.
Greatest bloody pop rock bands ever, in my humble opinion. I use the term humble lightly when it comes to music. Lincoln from David. I'm starting to wonder about Dennis Kucinich a little bit. But I don't know. There's a post here from Politico saying that Dennis Kucinich wants a Barack Obama primary challenger, but not himself. Dennis Kucinich wants to see someone challenge President Barack Obama in the Democratic primary in 2012. I think primaries can have the opportunity of raising the issues and making the Democratic candidate a stronger candidate. Kucinich, a Democratic candidate in 2008, said Thursday on C-SPAN, I think it's safe to predict that that President Obama will continue to be the nominee of the Democratic Party, but he can be a stronger nominee if he receives a strong challenge in a primary. But the candidate, said Kucinich, a seven-time congressman from Ohio, won't be him. No, he said when he asked if he considered challenging Obama, I intend to run for re-election in the House. Ohio will lose two House seats in 2012 because of the latest census numbers, and Kucinich wants to make sure he isn't one of them. As for the Democrat to challenge Obama, who he might be, Kucinich said he's not sure. That is not up to me to say. I'm focusing on being reelected to the House of Representatives, he said. Nonetheless, Kucinich did have some thoughts on the issues that a primary challenger might want to focus on. I'm very interested in making sure that creation of jobs, health care for all, priority and Medicare, those things are fundamental. And education, he said. Those are issues that certainly should be brought up in primaries. And finally, get out of Iraq and Afghanistan. We have to stop roaming the world looking for dragons to slay. We've things to take care of right here at home. I can buy into that. I didn't even really read into it. A couple weeks ago, there was a story about that Dennis is suing the canteen or something. The White House canteen. It was almost, this is an Onion story, right? But it appeared that it wasn't. I understand Dennis's logic here. I'm not sure if I'd go there. I'm not sure if, just with the way the Republicans are. But then again, maybe he's right. Maybe he's right. Maybe it will take a challenger to say, you're not really what we voted for. You haven't been what we voted for. Maybe he's got a point. Maybe he's got a point. I'm going to backtrack a little bit. And when David rang in last hour, I just started this thing about a discussion that's going on in Sweden at the moment, where half of my family comes from, where they're planning to make it illegal for private schools to teach religious doctrines is true. And at a blog called Camels with Hammers, a great name, camelswithhammers.com, there's a little discussion here. It says, via The Guardian, the Swedish government has announced plans to clamp down hard on religious education. It will soon become illegal even for private faith schools to teach religious doctrines as if they were true. In an interesting twist on the American experience, prayer will remain legal in schools. After all, it has no truth value. That everything that takes place on the curriculum's time will have to be secular. Pupils must be protected from every sort of fundamentalism, says the Minister of Schools, Jan Björklund. Creationism and intelligent design are explicitly banned, but are also proselytizing even in religious education classes. The Quran may not be taught as if true even in Muslim independent schools, nor may Bible in Christian schools. I love this. The decision looks like a really startling attack on the right of parents to have their children taught what they would like. Of course, it does not go so far as the Dawkins policy of prohibiting parents from trying to pass on their doctrines even in their own families. And if it did, it would certainly run foul of the European Convention on Human Rights. It does not even go as far as Nyamko Sabuni, the Minister of Integration, herself born in Burundi, who would like, she wanted to ban all religious schools altogether. But it is still a pretty drastic measure from an English perspective. The law is being presented in Sweden as if it mostly concerned fundamentalist Christian sects in the backwoods. But the Christian Democratic Party, which represents such people, if anyone does, is perfectly happy with the new legislation. There is little doubt that combating Islamic fundamentalism is the underlying aim, especially in conjunction with another new requirement that all independent schools declare all their funding sources. This would allow all the inspectors whose budget is being doubled to concentrate their efforts on those schools most likely to be paid to break the rules. In the background to these announcements comes the release of a frightening documentary film on Swedish jihads, which follows young men over a period of 2 years on their slow conversion to homicidal lunacy. The question is whether we in Britain will come to see this as a necessary move in the struggle to contain Islamist ideologies. Can a defense of freedom convincingly be mounted by a state that takes such a firm view of what is or is not true? Or can freedom not be preserved without such measures? And the author says, so today's open philosophical question, is it unjust to outlaw schools, even private religious ones, from teaching religious doctrines as though true? My answer would be, it's not unjust. It's not unjust at all. You know what? You should teach maybe, you know, the Quran and the Bible and all that stuff as being a piece of literature. You know? Just a piece of literature. It's on the same level as the Greek gods. This is what people believed before they learned better. They're works of fiction. Exactly. Look at them as for what they are. Works of fiction. Works of propaganda. And, you know, maybe teach, like if you want to teach about the Bible, teach about how much of its meaning gets shifted and changed and manipulated by translation. Teach everything about it. And show the things that are real in the world and how much these texts do not represent that. And in fact, fight against the ideas of progress. You know. Lottie says, I want the rabbit from Alice in Wonderland as my god. I had the rabbit from Alice in Wonderland as my bass player once. I had a guy that had a big furry beard and had a grin. Enormous. And you'd like hardly ever see his mouth, but when he'd smile, just these huge teeth. You know, and come out of the darkness on stage. And a brilliant bass player, too. so, you know, I reckon I'm going to pass this thing on to Bob for prayer meeting next week. Because I really did want to get to this yesterday and completely forgot about it. And Betsy was even trying to poke me throughout the show, and I missed it. Until the very end of the show and was like, oh, yeah, I wanted to go there. Because I think that this is a really, really, I think we should start having this dialogue right here, okay? If the Swedes are looking at doing this, and see, I think this, you know, it's, if you are teaching your child to believe a fiction to be true, which ill-equips them to actually deal with the reality of life, shouldn't that be considered child abuse? I think so. So as far as I'm concerned, this is a move to help protect children from having their minds abused by fundamentalist doctrines, and where, you know, you don't have people putting on design. I can't call it intelligent because it's not. It's moron design. Moron wishful thinking. Moron denial. You can't have that on the same level as science. You just can't. It's ridiculous. Stupid, 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 stupid. Oh, David keeps sending me things that look like they're going to make me mad. Why do you do this to me, man? Now, see, Wired has a piece here at the Danger Room. And, see, I don't like seeing headlines like this. Because, you know, I think the United States suffers a real fucking bad, almost fetish-type love for technology and thinking that technology is going to solve every fucking problem. And from the War Room, the Pentagon, drones can stop the next Darfur. Nice. Yeah, great. Indiscriminate bombing. We're not actually there. Hey, here's a joystick. Go kill some fuckers. When a predator flies above the conflict-ridden area, it's usually taking pictures of people doing very bad things. Sometimes it's about to use its missiles to kill someone, but Pentagon officials want to put drones to work on a very different job, saving lives. The new initiative aims to retask the military's massive fleet of overhead surveillance gear, drones, blimps, spy plane satellites to place watchful eyes on the perpetrators of mass atrocities. And that's just the beginning. Okay, this is not what I expected. But do I trust them to be used for peaceful purposes only? No. Inside the Pentagon, the term Mass Atrocity Prevention and Response Operations, or MAPRO, is gathering momentum. It's thanks to Rosa Brooks, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Rule of Law and International Humanitarian Policy, worked since the autumn to turn MAPRO into a basic military function. A basic part of that effort is enlisting military tech to provide early warning about where mass murders or rapes are developing. Okay, I'm getting spun around a little bit on this. Be interesting to see drones used to actually defend people. Indeed, MAPRO isn't just about early warning. A drone that snaps pictures of trucks full of militia heading for a besieged village can also be a powerful deterrent, Brooks says. If their boss believes that someday an international court might enter drone footage as evidence in a genocide trial. That's the big if. Not every mass killer cares about ending up in court or about being watched, especially if he doesn't think foreign armies will come to topple him. Sudan's Omar al-Bashir, for instance, surely knew that the United States had spy satellites overhead while his forces committed genocide in Darfur. But the slaughter continued. Since no one's talking about launching missiles from predators at genocides, will any killer really fear having them record full-motion video of his crimes? Good bloody question. It is such a frickin' complicated world. Makes my head spin. Makes my head spin. Lottie's just sending me a link that he's telling me I must check out after the show, and I will. There was it's a rejected Super Bowl ad that the Catholic League went ape shit over. Oh, the Catholic League. Is this some sort of you don't need a God ad? You can be happy being godless? Ooh, I hope so. I will be checking that out. Oh, it's a Doritos Super Bowl commercial. Really? And the Catholic League went nuts. Holy crap. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Is this going to be another example of having to rewrite the joke for people who don't freaking get it? Is that where we're at? Really? A Doritos commercial? I'm very curious to see what this is. And I guess it's one of these things where the audio ain't going to make the point. I'm going to have to see it. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't get to. And I haven't actually seen Susan around today. So I'm not sure if a blog post got one up. There's a bunch of stuff I didn't actually get to. There's a really great piece at Grist. A lot of this stuff is from Gene that I didn't get to today. Entitled Smackdown, Climate Science versus Climate Economics. And this piece is a really, really, really good kind of clarification of the non-discussion that we have at the moment. How we're having two non-sequitur debates about the climate science and climate economics. It's a really great piece by David Roberts. I highly recommend you go and check it out. It's a bit lengthy, and there's a lot in it. And it absolutely recommended reading. I also recommend going to Democracy Now. They've got a great segment, and like I said, I'll try and get these links up in a little while. Talking about the workers' strikes in Egypt that started yesterday. See, this is another thing where this is actually the escalation where the people's side is getting stronger because, you know, in the square over overnight, the different groups actually separated so that they could talk to the media as groups. So, like, the lawyers that were now protesting were as a group, you know, and to basically show solidarity in all these different professions. Right? And all right, Lottie, I will be watching this. Okay. He's kind of giving me the rundown. This ad supposedly shows some priest getting a divine message to swap the bloody flat wafer out with a Dorito. And the blood is replaced, the wine is replaced with Pepsi Max. Oh, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. Even without seeing it, that's hilarious. Okay, I'll be checking that out. But the Democracy Now! Piece, I'll get that up. Just because labor, see, we talk about this, we've talked about this for years on the horn, you know. The labor movement needs to be strong. And here you're seeing now as this thing grows, the workers' groups and unions are showing solidarity by joining the protests and having work stoppages. So this is why I think it's incrementally that the protesters are just getting stronger. But, David said, we don't know what's going to happen. We are at that fixing to boil over point. And where we're going to end up, nobody knows. No one knows. So, with that, I'm going to wrap things up. Thanks to David and Jim and those who called in today. Thanks to Lottie, Texas Betsy, Sparky Dunk, and everybody who's sending links today. And Gene. If y'all could have seen my email box last night, I think Gene's been dying for me to be back on air. Because the whole internet came down in broken down, itemized form to me overnight. He's just a wonder. So stick around for Rick Smith. Hit that donate button. Bob will be back on Monday. Thanks for everything. And as always, Gina, it's all for you.
I'm saying at some point, got to wake up. And we have got to face the reality that we need to create jobs at home and reward the people who stay here, not the people like iMelt who take jobs overseas. Last week we talked about the themes we're going to continue to hear. And the number one theme is going to be, and it's for the longest time, got to tighten our belts, got to tighten our collective belts, because, you know, we need to run government like you run your kitchen table, even though that's completely ignorant for someone who's running government to say. But it's a nice theme. Yeah, we got to tighten things down so they can cut those programs that benefit people. So, interesting. Mike Terzai gave an interesting speech today, which I wanted to play a couple of clips from because I just, you know, I get this feeling like I'm getting screwed. I'm paying this guy's salary. If we want to use that frame, that Terzai, he works for me. I'm a taxpayer. This guy, basically, not the brightest bulb in the box. Listen to some of this stuff.
So what are they talking about?
Well, number one is certainly fiscal responsibility. Live within your means. Tighten up your belts, just like families and businesses are doing across the state. Second, jobs. Private sector job creation. You cannot grow government and grow the private sector at the same time. We want to make sure that Pennsylvania is working towards making sure that there are family-sustaining jobs for its citizens, so that they can take care of themselves first and foremost. And third, people are looking for integrity in government. I think integrity in government primarily means, look, you're not taking care of yourselves, you're taking care of the citizens of Pennsylvania.
So, jobs second. Personally, all the polls I see, jobs number one. And then the belt tightening. Although I don't think most people understand what the belt tightening is going to entail. And we're going to go through a whole bunch here in the next 6 months talking about belt tightening. And as I've said a number of times, look, I think our problems are on the